the naga hide coat. In one corner of my bedroom closet, protected by a clothing bag, is the only winter dress coat I've ever bought. It's black with fine leather piping on the sleeves and the stand-up collar. It has a stylish cut, one I like to think makes me look a little slimmer. These days, there aren't many occasions when I have need of a dressy coat, so I haven't worn it often. But each time I've put it on, I found myself thinking back to the coats my father made for me. I was 6 the year he made my first coat. At the time, we still lived in Austria, in a camp for people displaced by the war, where something new was invariably made over from something old. My new coat was made over from an ugly brown stubbly thing that my mother wore when she went out to feed the pigs. But we had booked passage for Canada, where she didn't expect to have pigs to feed, so her coat was cut down and remade for me. Because my mother worried I might be chilled by the North Atlantic winds, she insisted the coat be double-lined. The double lining provided lots of warmth, but it also added considerable bulk, which meant I couldn't keep my arms down at my sides. They sort of stuck out at a 45-degree angle and brushed the walls as I walked through the ship's narrow passageways. For safety's sake, she had dyed the fabric a bright shade of red, so I would be more easily seen if I happened to fall overboard and ended up bobbing around in the sea like a lost fishing buoy. As it turned out, the coat and I both arrived in Canada dry. Once we were settled in Toronto, my mother insisted that I needed a new coat twice a year, one for Christmas and one for Easter. "It can't be helped," she'd tell my father. "You can see for yourself how fast she's growing. And we're not so poor that we have to be embarrassed to show our faces in church." And so the three of us would head down to the fabric stores on Queen Street near Spadina to search out a suitable remnant. Now that always involved lengthy discussions and some serious haggling over the price. But invariably, it was my mother's choice that came home with us, wrapped in brown paper and tied with string. And many a night after that, I was lulled to sleep by the thrum, thrum, thrum of my father's sewing machine as he toiled away on my behalf. Of course, when you're dealing with remnants, you don't always get your first choice of fabric or color. But I can tell you, every single coat my father made fit perfectly. Each winter coat was warmly lined, and he always added a piece of chamois under that lining, right in the middle of my back, to keep out the wind. But of all the coats my father made, the one I remember best is the one he made the year I was in grade 12. It was the year of Twiggy and the miniskirt. Now, I don't want you to think I ever owned such a garment. Neither my parents nor our school dress code allowed for that. I was pushing the envelope if I bared my knees. But I did want that season's coat to be a little shorter than the one from the year before. "Bist du verrückt? Are you crazy?" my mother stormed. "Do you want your kidneys to freeze?" Heavy negotiations followed. But finally, my father, trying to appease us both, agreed to shorten the coat a little. And in order to keep me warm, he made that season's coat not out of fabric, but out of a silver-colored naga hide. Let me just say, for those of you who don't know, there is no such beast as a naga. So rest assured, no animals were sacrificed on my behalf, because naga hide is a man-made material, like a fake leather used for upholstery. I like the coat, It was a straight cut and tapered a little at the bottom. I thought it looked stylish when paired with colored tights and high boots. The snow could fall, the wind could howl, and the thermometer plummet. But nothing, nothing penetrated the naga to reach my hide. Unfortunately, what my father hadn't considered was the fact that winter weather caused naga hide to stiffen. And on cold days, the hem of that coat smacked the back of my legs with an audible whoop, whoop, whoop. And by the time I reached shelter, my legs were often red and raw and sore. Worse still, on the really cold days, the whole outer layer of the coat refused to bend. It got so that there were times when I couldn't walk with the normal gait, and I waddled along so stiffly, I probably looked like an ambulatory roll of aluminum foil. Over the years, my father made many, many coats for me, each one to my mother's demanding specifications. Of course, nothing ever stays the same. The time came when my mother passed away, and then arthritis stiffened my father's fingers, and he was forced to stop sewing. I was retired myself by then, and I didn't need a new coat. Not for a long time. But finally the day did come when I needed one. I was secretly pleased by the thought that this time the choice of style, the fabric and color would be mine alone. But when I started shopping around, I was dismayed to find that there were almost no choices as to color because the coats on the racks were all black. And I was shocked to discover that dress coats, winter dress coats, in Canada no less, were being sold without a warm lining, never mind the chamois. I couldn't imagine what my mother would have said. I finally settled on the coat that now hangs in the corner of my closet. As I said, it looks good, and each time I've put it on, I found myself thinking back to the coats my father made and wishing I had appreciated each one just a little bit more.